Okay, so welcome back to Uncensored English. My name is Dr. J.P.B. Gerald. I am the host. A lot going on with the book. Yeah, really excited about that. You know, it's available for pre-order, so that's in the intro. I don't think anybody pays attention to the show notes, but that's true. But I got a good one for you today. I'm here with Dr. Brett. I will be here with Dr. Brandi Cross. She works for or leads the Pod Lab, which is what you think it is. We may or may not talk all about that. She does a lot of things, though, right? I'm going to ask her about all of the different things she does, but you know how I am. We're going to have a conversation, and it's going to go off into left field as we do. I hope that you enjoy the show. We talk about the racially, linguistically, and neurologically minoritized. I've been trying to get her on the show for a while, and we're finally going to have this conversation. So I'm excited for you to hear it. All right? All right. I don't know why I'm shouting. I just, whatever.
You have to record the thing. It's not a good time. Like acid reflux, all the way up and down the body just goes haywire.
Yeah. I can't have any after noon or I won't sleep.
You know, I never really drank coffee in like high school. And I didn't really drink in college. So after college, knowing that I never really drank it, I thought that that would actually work. Because I was trying to, like, in college, I just stay up partying all night. And then, like, I got to be, you know, the energy to do that doesn't last for so long. So then I went to South Korea in 2008 to teach. That's how I started my career, right? And, you know, I thought after college that I would party less. And then I moved to South Korea. No. Obviously much less now. I don't really go out that much these days. But, you know, back then. And, like, I had to, like, put effort into staying awake.
Right.
And so I thought that if I go to the convenience store and I get one of those, like, double shots, you know, the Starbucks, the thing that you get from the store, right?
Yeah.
I'm like, if I drink this, I'll stay awake. Yeah, I just got, like, acid reflux and gas. So it was just like, well, this is... And I was like, I was still tired. And I was like, well, why? And now I'm just uncomfortable. Like, in the club, uncomfortable.
So, no, seriously. Like, my partner, he's like, I don't know how you wake up. Sometimes I'll wake up, like, last night, the cat's pushing on my leg. He wants to cuddle with my shin and the bony parts of my legs, which is weird. Because he's skinny also. So we're both skinny, just matchsticks, you know what I mean? It's not very cuddly. So I'll wake up at 3 a.m, drink a cup of coffee and go back to bed. Like, he's like, that is so weird. And I'm like, no, the caffeine, like with ADHD, it just kind of puts me back into like sleep mode.
He's like, yeah. And I realized that later because I hadn't been diagnosed when I was younger, obviously. And then the worst with coffee was when I tried so then again, I came back from Korea and like my college has like the most intense reunions of any school for reasons I don't quite understand. Like they invite everybody back. Now most schools will invite everybody back, but they don't pay attention to you unless it's 5, 10, 15, whatever. Right. But my school, like there's like a 3-hour parade the reunion is 3 days long, starts on Thursday afternoon and it goes until like Sunday morning. Right. And then graduation is like the following Tuesday. So it's just this big celebration before graduation. And on the Saturday, they do like a 3-hour parade. The 25th reunion is the kings and queens and so forth of the reunion. And they lead the parade. And then they go to the oldest living people they can get there. Call them the old guard. These people graduated in like 1940. Right.
Whoa.
And I mean, when I was in college, however many years ago, these people graduated in the 20s. Right. But it's 1940 now. Right. So these people are like 100, and they're being driven in golf carts, and it just goes every year until this, and then the last people walking are the soon-to-be graduating seniors.
That's nice, though.
Yeah. However, it's like 3 hours long, and everyone's partying the whole time, so on and so forth. So, like, at the end of the 3 days, like, when I was 25, I was like, even at 25, I was like, I can't, you know, I would go down Thursday and just, like, do stuff all night Thursday, do stuff all night Friday. And then Saturday, I was just like, I can't. Because the other two nights, the stuff doesn't really start till the evening. Like,
right.
Like presentations and stuff during the day. And people drink, but it's not like a thing. But then, like, starting at like dinner time and like goes. But that's the normal at that age amount of things. But then, the Saturday, it starts at the parade, and the parade starts at like 2. And like you gotta keep going, right? And so one night when I was I was actually 24, I was about to be 25, I was like, no, I'm staying up. And I drank 5 cups of coffee throughout the day, thinking like, this will keep me up. And I just had like stomach pain and was tired.
Yeah. It can really hurt your stomach though.
Yeah. And I was like, what's happening? I called my girlfriend at the time because she worked late. And so I just knew she would pick up the phone. And it was like 3 in the morning and she had just gotten off work. And I was just like, what's happening?
Yeah, I'm like super sensitive. So I can't drink espresso. I can't drink hard liquor, like anything too strong. I can't smoke dabs, like anything that's too strong. Like I can take the coffee. I can have like flowers. I can smoke flowers of cannabis, but like everything has to be like very much in moderation. I feel like I'm like too sensitive maybe to everything, but yeah, I do like really, stimulation. So
I can't really do hard liquor anymore. I will have like a glass of bourbon with my dad, but I can't like drink it.
Right. That has to be it for me. Right.
Right. Cause like,
especially bourbon that puts me to bed.
Yeah, me too. When I was in Korea, like, you know, the things are so cheap, relatively, that, like, I would get, like, 151 in Coke, and they don't charge you for a double. I'm just like, put more in. They're like, okay, right? Mm-hmm. And I just would just, you know, I'd be, like, drunk for, like, $10, and, you know, I'm, like, 21. I didn't care. It's fun.
Pure alcohol.
Basically, like, you could set it on fire.
I clean my lab with 151.
Yeah, you could set my breath on fire. You know, after that, right? I don't know how I survived. Because I wasn't, like, the thing is, I wasn't doing this before work or anything. I wasn't being irresponsible in that sense. But just, you know, speaking of which, so we sort of backed into this, and I'll edit the beginning of it. I'm not going to edit it out. I'm just going to put a normal middle of sentence at some point. Although I do crossfade the tracks together, so it always sort of comes in the middle of a sentence. But I'm here with Dr. Brandi Cross. As I said in the introduction, the episode's called Multilateral Mind because that's what they said about themselves on their website, although I changed it from, you know, interest to mind or whatever. But if you want to introduce yourself to the folks, the small number of people who listen to this, and explain a little bit about some of the things that you do, this would be the opportune time to do so.
Hello. As you said, my name is Brandi Cross. I am the first founder of a national cannabis research laboratory in the United States. I'm one of 4 female founders in the cannabis industry as of filming this, I believe, or recording this. I am an adjunct professor at both Cal State LA and Cal Poly Pomona in biology and chemistry, respectively. I am a advocate for the houseless and people of color here in my hometown of Los Angeles. I've worked on social equity for the cannabis programs here in LA, all the way to working on the problem with spice down in Skid Row. I'm kind of like the neighborhood scientist, you know what I'm saying? I'm a graduate of Johns Hopkins School of Medicine. My PhD is in biochemistry, cell and molecular biology. And all my other work has been kind of an ethnic studies affinity, being that I study cannabis. And as I'm writing right now, you study cannabis and cannabis laws. So it keeps my multilateral mind going for sure.
Yeah, it sounds, I mean, the subjects are not the same, but it sounds similar to the way that you know, I'm glad that I ended up where I did career-wise. I say ended up like I'm 90, but like the way things have gone, because especially once I got the diagnosis with ADHD, like I should have known that I was going to need to be doing like 5 things. You know, like I'm not, maybe in 5 years, but I'm not confident enough to be completely off on my own in terms of, you know, I need a base, you know, so I don't have to worry about stuff, but like, I also needed a position where they were, I didn't know this until like, you never know until you get a job, how the job is going to be, right? You can read what you read and the interviews are going to be how they are, but this is still only a few hours of discussions, right?
Right.
And I found out what I realized on my very first day at this current job that worked out. My boss told me, I'm not a micromanager. I don't have time to be. Right?
Right.
And I'm like, huh. And I realized that micromanagers have a lot of time on their hands.
They
Like,
do.
because you have to spend time doing that nonsense.
I can understand that. I've experienced that in laboratory work with my bachelor's degree. A couple of micromanagers, and all they did was mess me up because they were distracting me by looking over my shoulder. It's like you can have one or the other. You can either leave me alone and have this data right, or you can keep messing me up and we'll waste money all day. But you've got to get from over my shoulder.
Yeah, it was really annoying at my last job, and I've said this on my podcast enough, but I haven't said it to you. So people listening be like, "Oh my God, you're saying this again." But like, the projects I was working on at my last job did not matter, and I don't mean that in a like capitalist sense of like, "Oh, we're doing doesn't matter." I don't mean that. I mean literally, they didn't matter because we were consultants. It was a team, an official job. It wasn't an independent thing, but like our job was to develop curriculum for the city of New York, right? We did not work for them. We were their clients, or sorry, they were our clients. In fact, our boss called them the client, and I'm like, just say the city anyway. They would say, we need you to develop curriculum on X, right? That's what our job was. But over time, I realized that the city did not listen to us. Like, we would develop the curriculum and we teach the class, and the workers, I liked the workers a lot, right? Not all of them, but a lot of them, right? Because they were just people, right? They're just New Yorkers, right? And like, it was one of the few times that I gotten a chance to just work with just some like lifelong New Yorkers. I'm not saying that to be like people who aren't from this country or different. I just mean like I went to all these exclusive schools, and I hadn't been able to spend as much time with just some people from Brooklyn, Queens, and all this. Aside from people like who I knew from just my neighborhoods. So that was cool. I liked that, like getting to know them, and once I settled in, it worked well. But they would always bring up questions in the class that we couldn't answer because we didn't know. And ultimately, over time, especially in 2020 when we all were sent home, I realized like, oh, like the city does not intend to act on any of the recommendations we give them. They're just m developing these trainings so that they can cover their ass, so that like they're like, look, we developed a system and we trained you, so you should be able to use it. Which, like, to be clear, some of that is cynical, but some of it's also true in the sense that, like, we do need to train
And
people on
some
the
of it's
system.
for liability
Right,
reasons.
exactly. There's a liability of it, literally. There's the practicality of it, because in the sense that if you develop a new system, you do need to train people on it, right? Like, they inherently know how to do it. But when we made larger policy recommendations, which would come out of the discussions, they would be like, okay, and they never listened. And so at a certain point, I realized that my bosses were micromanaging us in a very sort of look over the shoulder way, quite literally sometimes, because they were nervous about their own positions. And I found out, I texted my old coworker yesterday just because I just hadn't talked to her in a couple of years, right? And she said, yeah, nobody left since you. You were the last one to leave. I left 2 years ago.
Oh my goodness.
And it's not a big team. It's not like it's 100, it's not like it's 100 people. It's like
Are you
90
telling
people.
me more tenure track faculty have left my department than your last job?
Right, which is
Wow.
weird. I mean, I think a lot of it is that what happened. So when I was about to leave, I got really lucky in some ways. And I don't just mean with the job I got, which is separate, because, but anyway, I was working on this. So I was going to the office twice a week, which is what I do now. I don't have to, in my new job, I don't have to. I just get bored at home. So I need to change scenery. So I go in, there's nobody in my office. I just go in and sit in a big armchair and hang out by myself. Right. But like, I like going to Manhattan, being in Midtown. Walk, I work next to Koreatown. So like, it's a lot of stuff to do,
Ugh, yum.
Exactly. But never, but like I don't go out much at night. So the main way I see people is either these podcast discussions or I go to lunch in Koreatown, right?
Nice. Yeah.
Or like a happy hour or something. But like the point is, with a toddler, I don't really go out late. But the point is, I don't have to go in now. At my last job, They had asked us to go in twice a week, and I didn't really mind because, again, I had been at home for a year and a half, and I was like, I gotta get out of here. But all my coworkers didn't want to go in. Now, they said officially that it was safety issues, which I would have believed had we not all been told that they had simply bought houses farther away. Like, just admit what's going on. It's fine. Just because, like, amongst ourselves, they would have this discussion, and then they would tell the bosses, like, oh, well, it's not safe. I'm like, perhaps it's not safe, but that's not why you're doing it.
Especially you.
Right, exactly. You know, and they just don't want to go in, which is fine. Just be honest with people. But the point I'm making about all this is that this week, I received the job offer for this job on March 28th of 2022, right? And I gave them 2.5 weeks notice. That was like a Monday. So, my last day was going to be April 15th. And what was really great about that timing wise is that they had kept trying to make all my colleagues to go back to the office. They kept saying no, like I just said, right? And then they're saying the drop dead date is April 1st, or I guess April 2nd, because that was a Monday. And I was like, I don't want to be here when these people come back because they're going to be all mad. And I don't like I don't like them, and it's just gonna be worse, right?
It's even worse because you like might laugh inappropriately.
Yeah, well, it's just because in the sense that like I've had issues at that job, and like I didn't necessarily have a problem with them overall, but it's just that they were older and you know a little bit more set in their ways and so forth. And but you don't have to be bad if you're older. That's not what I'm saying, but you know, it just was like I didn't feel like I could really be myself around them, and I didn't get along with a lot of them, and. You know, at one point, for the reasons I told you, I realized that these things didn't matter. And with ADHD, if you really something matters, like, it's really hard to get it done. And it's just not happening, right? And so I almost lost my job because of it. Although, in retrospect, I think they were just threatening me harshly because they were mad because they actually did need me. At the time, I didn't know that. Like, in retrospect, I'm just like, I think they were just threatening me really hard because they needed me to do stuff as a body. They didn't need me. They needed a person. And they knew it would take a long time to hire somebody. So in retrospect, the anxiety I dealt with the months when I thought I was going to lose my job was not worth anything. So thanks for that. Focus, Justin. All right. So, but anyway.
No, it's so relatable. So relatable.
So anyway, I'm leaving that job. And they said that, like, they want you to come in this many times a week, but you don't have to come in if you're either teaching a class or rehearsing to teach the class, right? And because the city workers, like, we still weren't using the classroom in the office. So if the people were in, sometimes the city workers would be in the office, they'd just be on the desks, right? Mm-hmm. So we're not going to go sit at our desks in the office and just be shouting, right?
Right.
So they said if you're doing a class, stay home. Or if you're rehearsing for a class. For reasons that I do not understand, they loved rehearsal, just like days and days of rehearsal, so that it'd be perfect. And just like, now when I teach class, I don't rehearse at all. Like, I write down a little deck, and then I just talk, you know?
Right.
I didn't know what I'm talking about, but anyway. So I engineered it such that I was teaching a class that was going to last until April 14th. And I was going to be rehearsing until the class was taught. So I didn't have to go, like, from March 28th, I didn't have to go back into the office until the class was over. And then I only went into the office one time on April 15th, my last day, like, gave in my computer and left, right? And so I didn't have to deal with any of that. But the reason I brought all of this up is because I heard that a few months after I left, my colleagues found a loophole where they all dropped down to technically being part-time, and the loophole allowed them not to have to come in.
Oh.
And like, they were able to keep their, like, insurance and stuff, but, like, they lost some sort of privilege, right? But they basically all took a pay cut, because they didn't have to come in. And I'm like, well, just look for a different job. I don't know. I'm not saying it's easy to get a new job, but I'm just like...
Well, I mean, there's not a lot in upstate New York.
Yeah, well, they're not, exactly, right? You know, or New Jersey or something, one of them, like, Pennsylvania.
Or, you know. Wherever.
Right.
Homestead isn't probably local to anything.
But I just can't believe they're all still there, you know? And what is this? Business line. Nonsense. All All right. Anyway, so when you think about, because we've been trying to do this for a while, and I think that that's sort of finding different ways to contribute to the, I don't know, scholarly community, scientific community, academic community, just the community in general, I think is one of the focuses here, right? The thing is called multilateral mind. So how do you feel that, because it's not like you do, because what I get frustrated with academics a lot is they're like, I know this one thing and I don't want to talk about anything else. And I'm like, I get that you shouldn't speak out of turn about things you don't know about. But they take it so far that they're like never, I tried to put a coalition together for 3.5 years, 2.5, whatever, 2021, about sort of race and language education, right? And we might have put together a conference or some sort of symposium later, right? But we tried to put it together and we put a whole like whether it was Jamboard or whatever, one of those whiteboard pages where you can all comment on online, right?
Oh,
Yeah,
yeah, like
just
memo
sort of
board or
yeah. So
whatever.
then like brainstorm, right? And the people who were the most active at first were coming mostly from an education perspective, and other people were just like, well, technically I'm a linguist, so I don't know if I should really, well, this is really about education. I'm like, oh my God, we are close enough that we can have this discussion, right? Like, so anyway, the question I was actually trying to ask you before I kept babbling
No, you're.
was about like, how do you find, clearly you wouldn't do it if you didn't want to. Obviously, there are logistical, decisions that are out of your hands, but how do you find that doing things multilaterally, contributes more positively than just being on a straight and narrow path?
Oh. Well, apparently it makes people very jealous. It's my experience. Because they're when you're not educated in things other than your topic, you see your topic through this like tunnel vision, right? So I study cannabis, but I don't study cannabis without the context of the racism, xenophobia, sexism that got us the cannabis laws we had for so long. It's in that context, which makes it DEI, which makes it part of even ethnic studies, and history. And it also creates a sense of belonging, particularly in the Los Angeles area, where we have the largest cannabis economy and people have, I mean, if when people think of LA, who do they think of? Anyone they think of is associated with cannabis, whether they're pop culture icons and some of the older people like Willie Nelson, right? LA has been part of that kind of counterculture for a long time. And so it does create a sense of belonging also in that of the anti-cannabis laws were specifically against Mexican people and Black people. And without that context, I'm not going to look at cannabis as a plant and in a truly scientific way. I'm going to look at it as like a poison plant or had literal people think it has thorns. Like, why do you think it has thorns? It does not have thorns on it. It's just a little plant. It's a little herb plant. Like a sage plant or a mint plant, right? But in the context of all the colonial myths, that's the kind of imaginary harms, I guess, that people who are really can't contextualize cannabis, that's where their mind goes,
I wasn't sure. I was like, I said, if I start typing right now, like, I knew as soon as I did that, you would stop talking. So I just like, it's like you're putting food in your mouth. You're like, oh, it'll be fine. But it's you. And then they call on you. Right.
Right.
Yeah. I think that that's important. I think that it's one of the things that's not taught to enough people in school. And I don't specifically mean the subjects you're talking about, right?
Right.
Like, but what you're talking about in sort of being multilateral, being multifaceted, right? Frankly, I don't know. I mean, maybe I can ask you this question shortly, but it's like, I do wonder, and I know a lot of academic programs aren't set up for this, but there are enough where they give you enough freedom to develop this sort of thing, right? Like, I ended up this way. My program was not like, you should do all these things. They just didn't stop me when I did, right?
Right.
And like, frankly, I don't know that every program should be built to give everybody so many different avenues at once, because frankly, most, like, how would they resource that? It would be a challenge. I think it's just, it will be more important for programs to get out of the way when they see that someone has an interest in several related things, you know? So.
Right. And some people always say, like, oh, what do they say? The crazy saying they say, you're a master of, what is, how does
Jack
it go again?
Master of none.
But a master of some is better than a master of none. They never finish the sentence. And I always notice that.
Right.
Because a master of some is better than a master of none. And right now, we have a lot of issues in STEM, we'll just say that, especially in higher education.
I think that, you know, people, you know, there's things where I know I don't know enough to comment, right? So I don't. I mean, like, I may have a conversation, but, like, an official public comment, I'm just like, I really don't know what I'm talking about, right? Yeah. So I'm not going to say anything, right? Or I'll say, if someone asks me, because sometimes people ask me questions on things, and I'm just used to have a doctorate, I'm just like, I don't know anything about that. Or, like, I don't know more than you know, you know?
Right.
Because I haven't studied everything, right? There, so there's this thing, though, especially in terms of education, because you do teach and all this stuff, right, is that, like, being a subject matter expert isn't the same as being able to convey and teach the subject.
Oh, right? Gosh, very different. Yeah.
And it's, they are related skills, just not the same skill. Because, like, mm-hmm. you know, it does help to know something about subjects to be able to teach it, right? Like, you should
right.
know what you're talking about. But,
yeah.
that, I think, and I do wonder if this has helped me. I learned how to be a teacher before, an English teacher before I knew anything about English. I mean, I know how to speak English. But what I mean is that I didn't go back to my master's and learn how to be a language teacher until I had already been a teacher. And so I'd already developed the ability to develop a rapport in the classroom, right? I'm not saying that that's the best way to do it, because I was completely unqualified when I started, and we shouldn't be subjecting students to that, even though I was sent to Korea, I went to Korea rather than doing it here in the States. But, and as you know, so I don't think we need to be doing that. But on the other hand, like, that's, to me, is this, I know, because you're literally a scientist, but I guess I'm a scientist and I'm a social scientist, right? Because education is social
right.
science, right? But, like, what I'm using this metaphorically, it's like the science and the art of the teaching,
mm-hmm.
right?
Mm-hmm.
You know,
mm-hmm.
like, I don't know that you can teach the art of teaching. I think that I think there is a science to it, because there are certain things that, like, look, because, like, I get frustrated sounding like a rigid fuddy-duddy sometimes at work,
right?
Where, like, people don't want to have any structure at all. I'm like, look, we have to. We have to do something, because otherwise we have no data at all. we gotta have some methods here. Like,
yeah.
We can be very creative in our methods, but we must have methods. And, like, I don't want to be, I want to be a creative man, but, like, I also, we can't make any conclusions whatsoever if we don't have any methods at all.
Right.
You know? And people want to try to get to what they don't use the right words for, but people want to try to get to intermediate outcomes without immediate outcomes, right?
Oh, yeah. And skirt responsibility of teaching by, you know, giving open book tests and, you know, skeet skirt. We have that in the university. Like,
yeah.
Then they get to me and I'm like, you can't write an essay. What's wrong? What? You're a junior. What happened?
Yeah.
That's not a skill I teach.
Right, exactly.
That was English.
I had, you know, in my classes, I'm teaching teachers, and they're not really test type classes. They're more essay stuff, right? But, like, you know, I tell them, I'm like, look, as long as I understand what you're saying, I want you to really put the thought into it, and I want to see what you're thinking about, right?
Right.
But that's what I tell them. And so I tell them, this is what I'm going to grade you on. Right? But to me, because I'm telling them that, then I'm setting a set of level of expectations.
Right.
Right? And if they meet them or don't meet them, that's what's up. I can't, especially because I'm teaching, like, full adults, not even college students who are technically adults often, but not, like, out in the world by themselves a lot of the time. Right?
Mm-hmm.
like I'm teaching like teachers who are like working teachers, right?
Right. Right.
So like at that age, which you might be 24, but you're living in an apartment somewhere, right? So mm-hmm. you may not be, but here they are. I'm just like, look. There are only four things I asked you to do this semester. And then it's not like four assignments, but like four genres of thing. I'm like, keep this, do this, do this, do this. Right? If you just don't come to the class, I can't help you with the things that happen in the class. I even send out recordings. But then they say, well, what happened this week? I'm just like... You know,
I mean, there's been a weird motivation thing in education since the pandemic. I a lot of students phoning it in, even professional development people are like, why are people so like unengaged in workshops? And I can't really put my finger on it, but it seems like there's like an overall depression going on.
Well, I think one of the problems, which is not necessarily an oppressive thing that I'm about to say. I think it's just a circumstance is that there were, understandably, because of the suddenness of it, a lot of poor programs and people who didn't actually know how to teach online. And mm-hmm. so they just brought their lecture onto the computer, right?
Right.
And you didn't have to, and they didn't make it so you had to engage. Right?
Yeah. They don't know how to do like the ones in the chat. They never had a YouTube channel.
Right. You know, like
or like Twitch.
I hate just talking. I mean, I love talking, but I hate talking into the void. So mm-hmm. as soon as I started teaching, I mean, part of it is that I designed my own little class. I had nothing to do with work in the middle, in like 2020. And I was teaching people and it was very interactive. Like, I don't like passive learning. I know, and this again, before I was diagnosed, right? I know now I don't like passive learning because, like, if I'm not talking or about to engage, I'm just not going to pay attention, right? I need to do something, you know? And, you know, I can't just silently, like, take notes or something. It's just not going to work for me. So I always assume that somebody out there thinks the way I do. Right? Statistically, there's probably somebody who has the same thing going on as we do out there, right? Mm-hmm. Depending on how big the group is. And I'm just like, if I can keep my interest, mm-hmm. I can keep everybody else's interest.
Yeah.
Right? Because, like, we are the bar for keeping interest. You know? Yeah. Like, if you can keep us interested in what you're doing,
right.
you can probably keep other people's interest in what you're doing. So I'm always trying to keep people interested. It's the same thing in my writing, is that like I can't just, you know, yeah. So there's a lot of that. Like, I wasn't blame people for not necessarily knowing how to do that, because they probably, a lot of them hadn't done it before, right?
Right.
And I do blame them for not figuring out like a year and a half later, like if they were still doing it after that much time, like,
and
it the same way, and then just being like, well, nobody's paying attention. I mean, like, you're not making it so they should pay attention to you. You're not
right.
doing it worthwhile.
There's no like democracy or question asking in the lecture or any kind of, I don't know. It feels, yeah, it can feel very sterile. And I know we still have that issue in the sciences. People just want to rattle off everything they know, and the students are scrambling to take notes. And like, at some point they're just like, oh, well, this is, you know, too much. And I see that a lot too. And it is demotivational just to have information just spewed at you. I mean, I at least do a little interpretive dance for my students.
Yeah,
or act out like my molecules. Like, my molecules are homies, and I refer to them as like in kind of a personification way, you know, to get them to understand like pathways. Like something to get their brain going if we can't get our bodies going. Cause you know, they pile like 80 students into a genetics class. Like, that's where I'm at. And I'm like, look, we can't, all do like group projects here, but we can move around.
Well, yeah, one of the things that I do, because I teach a virtual class because it's national, right? So it can't not be virtual because they're all over the country, right? Mm-hmm. For my job, not my professor stuff, right? My professor stuff is virtual just cause, but my main job, I facilitate this course, a professional development course for housing developers. I told you all this, but I'm just saying it on the pod, right? And the job is to get them to amass more of the ability to do so that it's, you know, gentrification stemmed and so forth, right? Because ultimately we can argue about this all we want, but someone's going to develop the housing and it might as well be us if we're in our own communities. You know what I'm saying?
Right.
So anyway, once a month I facilitate this and it's 40 people on the call, right? But I keep us on time. I keep us talking. You know, I'm like, I'm going to call on you, right? Like, all this stuff. It took us a while to sort of get the rhythm, but, and then, I watch other people in my company do these things. And I'm just like, how does nobody know how to do this after 4 years? It's just like, and I don't even mean necessarily teaching, right? Because I know I'm not teaching that. I'm facilitating it, but I'm not the expert in that. I'm just helping the people have the conversations there, right? So I'm not necessarily expecting people to be good teachers when they come on a call. But, we do a lot of presentations in my company because there's so many departments and we often have to present about our departments to other departments so people know what everybody's doing, right?
Right.
And just, there are, first of all, there are understandably people who are nervous, so they have a script, so they're just reading, right? And I'm like, all right, well.
Yeah.
Technically, that person's going to have to do it because they're the person in charge of the department, so they're going to have to be the person. But I'm like, there's just so, I don't know, a lot of it is just energy. And I don't even mean energy, I just feel like energy, and I don't mean high energy, but it's just people aren't in control of their persona, I think.
Yeah.
How I would describe it.
Well, no, there's a rhythm to teaching, I feel like, and there's a rhythm you can get into that gets into the minds of students, I feel like. And also there's a lot, at least at university teaching, there's a lot of kind of the students sit down and they expect you to just kind of rattle off stuff because it's all they've experienced, you know, so they don't really know what to do when you're giving them examples and telling them, I tell my students, so I'm on the autism spectrum. I'm not just ADHD. I was born with cerebral palsy, so I have brain damage, so on and so forth. And I tell my students, if I say something and you don't understand it, just raise your hand and say it again, or just yell out, say that again. And I will rephrase it as many times as I need to in order for you to understand. I will draw it. I will perform it. We can dance. But that's all you have to do if you don't understand something. So it makes it kind of a casual callback rather than they have to raise their hand and ask questions per se. Because sometimes they don't know what to ask. They just don't know what's going on. You know what I mean?
Yeah. I think about, and my last job compared to this job, and a lot of the people there were, like I said, as many issues I had with them, they were experienced at educating. Like I can't say that that's not true, right? Mm-hmm. But it was so canned, right? Mm-hmm. Like they mm-hmm. would, and now I'm going to make this joke kind of thing,
mm-hmm.
right?
Da-dun-dun.
Yeah. Now, sometimes you can do that, and it can be, if you're, open about the fact that it's corny, then, it's fine. But sometimes it was just, I would get so mad. But, you can't really express that because they're not doing anything bad. It's just annoying, right?
Right.
But, I remember distinctly that we would be reviewing some of the questions we'd given them, and we'd go over the answers at the end, right? And for whatever reason, there were, I can't even remember the context, but two of the possible answers were D and R, right? So mm-hmm. one was D, one was R. And then he would always make the joke, who wants to go to DR, right? And I'm just like, can we just, every single time, do you have to do every day this man has to ask who wants to go to DR, right? And whereas the reason I'm bringing this up is because I was doing a sort of guest spot in a lecture this morning for a colleague, or I guess we're colleagues now because I graduated, but he was on my dissertation committee, so he's a professor that I working. I never met him in person because he lives in Iowa and I'm not going over there. But so anyway, I was presenting and so forth, and like, you know, I'm on the screen and they're all in the classroom, right? So I can't, there's only so much I can do to get them away.
Right.
Right? You know? Especially because it was like 9:30 in the morning for them, and they were just like, I'm just really tired, you know, and I'm just like, I get it, right? Mm-hmm. So I try to bring as much energy as I can. And finally, I got one of them to ask me a question, and I responded to her question. And then on the next one, I got a different person respond to questions. So I made a point of, you know, I always ask people's names if I don't know them, right? I can't ask everybody's name in advance. But if I don't know their names and someone comments, then I'll ask for their name usually, right? If I'm at a conference, I'll ask for their name, or I can see their name because it's on the whatever, right? So I asked the first person name. Her name was Meg, right? Mm-hmm. Same thing. Next person comments. Her name is Megan. So then, like, now you got a callback. Now you got something, right? Now I can make jokes about the fact that everyone's name seems to be Megan, right? Like, for whenever there was another dead period. And again, like, I don't think I can teach someone this,
mm-hmm.
right?
It's
like,
That's like when I say, like, I have students with, like, I have, like, in an 80-person class, I'll have 4 or 5 students with the last name all the same. All the same last name. And I'll just go, Mr. or, you know, whatever. And somebody will say something. Throw a stone into the pool.
Right. I mean, but it's
humor is very engaging.
Yeah, I learned in my very first day of teaching how far humor went, because they put me in front of like 40 Korean kids, right? And I didn't notice at the time. They'd been learning English for years, but they mostly weren't comfortable speaking it, right? I didn't know what the situation was beyond like the basics that they told me. So I'm just like, do these kids understand what I'm saying? Most of them did. They just didn't like. They weren't comfortable talking until they spent more time with me, right? So I'm in front of these kids and they're just staring at me, right? Not in a hostile way. They're just like, they're like probably looking at the black person, you know, aside from the television.
They're like, what's gonna happen?
Yeah, you know, and I'm talking to them in English, and it's very different because they were learning, they had been learning English for years, but like from Korean teachers, and it was more like grammar translational method, which was just like, they say something in Korean, say something in English, say something in Korean, say something in English. And I'm talking entirely in English, right? And I had a Korean teacher in there with me if something was complicated. So they would translate if it was like, I would have them help me if it was like instructions. Like, I don't want them to mess up the instructions of what I want them to do.
Right.
I don't need them to be confused about that, right? Mm-hmm. So I made this, I stayed up like 3 a.m. making this whole presentation the night before. Like, that was my first time. I never taught anything, right? And like, it was all about me and my experience, things I liked and so on and so forth. And then like, you know, it's a 50-minute class. I finished the whole thing in like 20 minutes. I was like, uh-oh. So it's
like, I have done that, though.
Because they didn't respond. So like, if they'd been responding, you know, we would have lasted the whole time. And so what I did was...
Just smiling at you.
They weren't even smiling. They're just staring at me. And I'm just like, oh no. Right? Because I thought they didn't
understand me.
I feel
like I've been there.
I thought they didn't understand me, right? Some of the, there were some who clearly didn't understand me, but like it was that's not why they were staring at me. They just didn't know what to do, right? Especially in their English classes, which were very like repeat, right? Like say something, repeat, say something, repeat. And so I'm like, all right. So I don't remember what I did in that very first class to stretch out the last 30 minutes. I have no idea. But by the second class, I'm like, well, I need to do something different. Because the thing is, like, everybody would have my class once a week. So I teach the same class like 20 times, right? For the same lesson. Which means that when I got to, this was March. And when I got to like April, like I'd already planned out all my lessons for the year. Cause I only plan like one lesson a week. So when I was teaching, I was just staring at my computer all day. I wrote 2 novels while I was there. Just didn't have that much to do. But anyway, I started making fun of myself. And it worked. I'm like, aha. And But authentically, though, because people can tell when you're being inauthentic, right? And this was more canned than I'd like it to be, but the first time, right? And then once I got to know them, I would make references to what's happening in the class, right? But, like, I remember my first time I connected with any of these kids is, you know, I was telling them my favorite sport is baseball. Baseball is very popular in Korea. They know what baseball
is. Absolutely.
Yeah. Yeah. Right? And so I was telling them my favorite sport is baseball, right? But then I started telling them how bad I was at it. And I was talking about how, and then I would pantomime, and I pantomimed myself in like eighth grade, and how I had two at bats and I struck out both times, right? And
right.
So I'd be like, strike three, and then they would laugh, right? And then I said, when I was pitching, I just gave up a home run, and then they would just laugh. I'm like, all right, okay.
Yeah, relatable. Relatable content.
But I mean, this is, but that's the thing with this whole thing and people being sort of disengaged. Like, if you were just sort of black screen for 2 years, right? And now they're asking you to come out of that screen, you know, I get if people were like that. And I think I really helped myself. I created that class, which ended up being the basis of my, dissertation. And, you know, that helped me keep my teaching going, and I don't know that I would have, I don't think I would have forgotten, because I've been teaching for like 16 years at this point, right? But it's kind of getting weird for me to recognize that that's true. I mean, I keep saying that's almost half my life, which is diminishing how old I am, but like, it is not almost half my life. Like, I'll be 38 soon. That's not half. Nope. Not half.
You're young.
But yeah, well,
yeah, I think self-awareness is huge and relatable. I know that I'm someone who's bad with time, as most neurodivergent people are. You're either early or late, and I'm a late bunny. And I remember, like, I'm so self-aware, like, sometimes I'll just, like, you know, as I'm shuffling into class, I'll just, like, drop things on accident, quote unquote, quoting with fingers. And, you know, they'll like kind of laugh, you know, it's especially like early in the morning classes where I do feel like that anyways, you know, and kind of be a klutz, you know what I mean? I even tell them I'm like the bunny rabbit from Alice in Wonderland. Like, I'm late all the time. Like, but I'm not actually late. Like, I'm like 1 minute late, right? But I'm always like very kind of aware that I look like I'm just shuffling in like all crazy with my coffee and like my coat, like, oh my god, you know, it's already 9:25, you know, and I realize how ridiculous I might look, so I kind of like will even amplify that, because that's relatable, because they just woke up too and felt the same way.
Yeah, I, you know, I think, because to me, I'm the early one, but it's not because I'm good with time, it's because I think people, you know, there's a part of me, and I gotta close out here, but I've said this to folks at work recently, which is that, like, I get a little sad when I take a step back sometimes and realize that a lot of what makes me very successful in my various pursuits these days, a lot of which is like energy and speed and so forth,
right,
these were compensation mechanisms for when I couldn't get anything done.
Right.
Like, I hit a wall in college where my parents were like, look, man, we're taking you out of here unless you get it together, right? And I'm not complaining about my parents supporting me in college, right? But they're like, no, right? Unless you get it together. And I wasn't failing, but I just wasn't doing well.
You could procrastinate and then do it really fast.
Right. I would wait till the last minute and do it not well, right? But just enough to get enough to get like C's and stuff. Right. And like,
even being in the right classes.
Right. I had a couple of classes that were just not that hard. And I actually got unlucky because my first semester, I happened to be in classes that I didn't realize were easy. I just didn't know.
Right.
And I got a bunch of great grades without having to try them. I'm like, oh, this is what it's going to be like. No.
Mm-hmm.
So anyway, between sophomore and junior year, they're like, and I said, I need to figure this out. Right. I had no idea about any diagnosis at this point. I just knew that I tended to not get things done, right? Mm-hmm. And so I said, here's what I need to do. I need to write everything down, and I need to conditioned myself to just the dopamine of getting a thing on my list done.
Yeah.
Right? And I said, but if I start with a big list, I'm going to go, well, I'm not going to do it. Right? And it was summer, and I had a retail job, but on the days when I didn't have a retail job, I didn't need to do. So, you know, I was like 19, so I didn't go to the bar or anything. So, you know, one day, I just sat down on a Microsoft Word document, because there was no Google Calendar in 2005, right? Microsoft Word document, and just typed out what I had to do that day, which was not very much. And so because I didn't have much to do, I did all of it. I said, okay, well, that's cool, right? And then I started doing that, and I kept it up. And to this, I mean, eventually I started using calendars, right? Like as one should. But then, you know, that's how I did it. And, I don't tell people as, like, guidance to do that. Like, this is what you need to do. I just tell them that's what worked for me. You know, it's in my book that's coming out where I talk about, like, even these days, I get three reminders for everything I have scheduled, right? I get a notification on my phone. I get a notification popping up on my computer. And then I get an email at the same time. So I can't, unless I literally, like, put my phone away and don't look at my computer, I can't miss it.
Yeah, I'm a phone alarm person. Yeah. I have, like, this nuclear war sound that goes off every time I need to do something.
Yep. Yep, and
Amber alert sound.
Right. And, you know, it works. But, like I said, it's a little sad because, like, I really had to work hard to do that. And I also, deep down, am afraid that, like, if I ever took my foot off the gas on any of these alerts, that I would forget something, because I still do forget things a lot of the time.
Right.
Like, right. And it's never, I always want, you know, it's like some people with medication, which I understand, but thankfully am not this way. Because I know I'm just like, if I need to take, I need to just take it and so I don't need any alarms and I don't need to mess around. Like, well, maybe today I don't need to do it. No, you just need to keep doing it. I just like, people are like, oh, I'm taking the medication, I feel better, I don't need it anymore. Right? Was like with me and the alarms, I could see how if I had been younger, I'd be like, oh, I've written everything down. I'm going to remember now. I don't need to do it anymore.
Oh, but the post-its fall off the computer.
Yeah.
And then you're like, oh, no, I forgot. It's the post-it fell off.
Right. But it always leaves me a little scared that I did forget something when someone mm-hmm. Sometimes yesterday, and I have to go after this, my student asked me, Professor, I have something to do on May 15th. I'll have to miss class. Let me know how I can make it up. And in my head, I'm like, class ends May 1st. Am I just wrong? Did I forget? Did I do something? So I go right. frantically looking at, I look at the syllabus and I look at this and I'm just like, no, class ends May 1st. Okay. Cause I'm just like, but how do I know? Maybe I made a giant mistake.
Right. That happens to me in student emails all the time. And I'm like, I'm sure that you're tripping. Right. It's not me, it's you.
But that's, it's stressful.
But I double check too. I mean,
you know, and he didn't do anything wrong. He just made a mistake, you know. So I told him, like, class ends May 1st. He's like, all right, thanks. So, you know, but that sort of constant indirect fear is there. And I've thankfully been able to use it as a motivating factor, but I still wish I didn't have to be afraid that things would go into the recesses of my mind and never come out, you know?
Right.
So anyway, Dr. Cross, I thank you for joining me this afternoon / morning.
Yeah.
I don't. Lovely. That's why I said multilateral, because we just talked about things, which is what.
Things, fun.
Yeah. I'm glad. I'm glad I finally got a chance to do this with you. So, yeah, if you have any sort of final notes on some of the things we talked about you want to share with folks, and otherwise, I'm sure we should do this again at some point.
We absolutely should. I just, you know, I'm so happy that you have this, you know, platform to talk about, you know, twice exceptional, as they call us people. It's an honor to be here, and thank you so much for having me on.
Yes, thanks for coming.